The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, The Death of Napoleon, Part 1, a detailed account of Napoleon's last days from April the 20th to the 25th. Although this will not be quite as technical as information that I have. I've kind of shortened it down a little bit, not to drive you too crazy, although there's still going to be lots of medical data in here. It's also a little difficult for me because my mother, who had breast cancer, when it metastasized, it went into her liver, and a lot of these symptoms are very similar to the last 30 or 40 days of my mother's life, which has always been a little troubling. So I've tried to kind of eliminate it for everybody, but you'll still get an idea it wasn't great. Of course, when we left off the last time, Napoleon was beginning to go downhill in July of 1820, with the reappearance of nausea, pain in the region of the stomach after meals, etc., and so on. But by January of 1821, his stomach was rejecting all solid food and was being nourished on basically soup and meat jelly. Vomiting, flatulence, gastric pain, constipation, increased weakness combined to provide glaring proof of a serious gastric affliction. Even as ignorant as the generals were, both Bertrand and Montholon could not fail to notice that the patient's physical and moral decline was significant. Now, of course, Montholon's wife had left, and he wrote her in a letter that, quote, "Our doctors claim that a change of climate could save him. I hope that this is true, but hardly believe it, because never seen anyone look more like a corpse than he does at the present moment," end of quote. And he also noticed that grayish color, the sunken eyes, a strained expression caused by anxiety and pain that people toward the end seem to come up with. Well, then the idiot doctors get involved. In March, there was a lot of vomiting. And to March, he began talking about gastric fever, then ordered 2 doses of emetic, which are 2 doses of tartaric emetic for a stomach already damaged and corroded by disease. Napoleon ends up suffering 1,000 deaths. He rolled on the floor. He obstinately refused all medicine prescribed by Antomarchi. This was the moment chosen by Hudson Lowe to engage on one of his clumsiest operations. The British orderly officer had not seen Napoleon for days. How could it have been otherwise, since Napoleon was confined to his bed? And the governor insisted on being reassured as to his presence. If the general refused to show himself, the door must be forced. In consternation, Montholon and Bertrand conceived the idea of calling in an English doctor as a consultant, with the dual aim of reassuring Hudson Lowe and in assisting Dr. Antomarchi in his difficult task. Their choice fell to Dr. Arnault, who was the surgeon to the 20th Regiment, who made an examination of Napoleon, but with scientific caution and political thought, decided not to commit himself definitely to any kind of diagnosis. His responsibility for the emperor's end is quite significant, for he was as ignorant as Antomarchi, but he was meaner. To get into the governor's good graces, he talked ceaselessly of hypochondria and of the illness being more mental than physical. On April the 5th, 1821, month before Napoleon dies, he stated he had never found him during any of his visits in the state described by Antomarchi. He believed that the illness was not serious. He even told General Bertrand that he thought there was no danger, and he advised Napoleon to get up and shave himself. Well, Lowe was satisfied. He laid it down that the disease, it was a disease of the mind, not the body, reflection of his conduct, his behavior to him, was now nothing, he was suffering from nothing, and added, with a grin of the tyrant, quote, "If a person was to go in there and make a great clamor, it would be the most likely thing to revive him," end of quote. This shock treatment, already held to be beneficial in mental illness, was certainly a strange one for a patient who was slowly being destroyed by an internal disease. 14 days later, Arnault had to alter his opinion and in a hurry. After leaving Napoleon, he examined the black substance that had been vomited, and by its nature decided there was ulceration of the stomach. In agreement with Antomarchi, the Englishman at once ordered pills to open the bowels and concoctions of quinine to give strength and reduce the fever, a witch doctor's remedy at a stage of illness when persistent vomiting and the fact that food eaten the evening before was regularly rejected the next morning, indicated a problem of his pylorus. On April the 25th, Arnaud discovered traces of blood in the vomit. He was still reluctant to talk of a serious or mortal illness and referred to a disturbance of the digestive organs. With great lucidity and possessed by his specialists, Napoleon went straight to the point. He attacked Arnaud that same day on his views of his illness. Quote, "How many openings are there in the stomach? How does the pylorus close? My father had a cirrhosis of the pylorus. Is it possible to recover from this? If it forms." He got the doctor to feel his side. "Is this the pylorus?" "No, it's the liver." "Could you tell if something was wrong with the pylorus?" "No, it would be impossible because it's underneath the liver." The Englishman clearly saw the purpose behind this running fire of questions, was to shift the facts so as to find out if the trouble was the pylorus, because the Montpellier doctors, some of the best in France, had declared it was hereditary disease that his father had. While the doctors hesitated, groped their way, and deceived the invalid, the sick man himself was thinking all the time of the last illness of his father, Charles Bonaparte, who died in the prime of his life of a cirrhosis in the liver, in spite of the skills of the medical facility at Montpellier. He knew very well that it was all up to him, and had already taken steps accordingly. On April the 10th, he discussed the terms of his will, and on the 12th, he got Montholon to take down a draft of his bequests from dictation. A whole book, or at least a chapter, would be needed to analyze his will, which was dated Longwood, Island of St. Helena, April 16th. "For emotion and policy, nobility and simplicity, royal generosity and bourgeoisie attention to details have all left their mark on it." And at some point, I'm going to go through the will with you so you're aware of it. It's quite interesting. Then on April the 27th, there was a violent vomiting in the presence of both doctors, and Arnaud at last informed Hudson Lowe of the extreme gravity of the illness. From this moment until Napoleon's deliverance, if you will, on May the 5th, the illness presented a long list of sordid details. Vomiting a brownish substance with the consistency of coffee grounds, hiccups, difficulty breathing, rapid and irregular pulse, falling temperature. On May the 1st, Napoleon fainted. On May the 3rd, he received the last sacraments. On the same day, two other doctors were called in, and four medical men decided to administer 10 grains of calomel. "Desperate diseases need desperate remedies," said Hippocrates. The unusually enormous dose of this unsuitable drug caused a terrible intestinal upheaval, which included loss of consciousness, difficulty in breathing, cold in the extremities, all the signs of a hemorrhagic and gastrointestinal system, possibly provoked by the reckless medication. A solution of ether and opium produced a restful period until the following day, on which date this extraordinary man at last gave up his struggle, saw life slipping away from him, and quietly entered into death. The only sign of life still remaining in the body that he had once lived in was his slow and difficult breathing, being eaten away by an inner sore made poisonous by grief, is what, of course, what the French historians talk about. And, of course, it's also discussed as his sole inheritance received from his father. And then he passes away. Now, although this is considered kind of a detailed account, actually, well, it's more of a general account. I have a more detailed version that I will go through with you next week, which talks about all sorts of other little things that are coming in, but particularly with Bertrand and some of the other individuals. I mean, there really wasn't anything that they could do, but what they did, of course, I've always found it just absolutely astounding that we bring a doctor from Corsica, who has basically been dealing with cadavers his whole life and never had worked with a living person. And the idiocy, and if you go actually go back and if you read all the biographies of Napoleon, he's always had stomach trouble. He was always afraid that what would happen to him is what happened to his father. It's one of the reasons why he did take a lot of stomach medication, and a lot of that had arsenic in it. And we'll get to the arsenic item, you know, later on. But it's to some extent he was finished off by his doctors. He could have probably lingered longer. He might have actually lingered in better condition for a while, but the way he was treated was just horrific. And of course, Marchand, who was his valet, he's the one cleaning him up and cleaning the bedding and the vomit and everything else. And so he was well taken care of in the will. So it is kind of sad to see this take place, and there's nothing worse than to have a friend or anyone ill being treated by idiots. We've all seen it. We know how painful that can be, and no matter what you tell people, they won't change. In Napoleon's case, he didn't have much choice. That's all that was available. So at this point, the sources are the same ones that I've been using to some extent with a little bit of difference. Napoleon's St. Helena by Martineau, Cachier de St. Helena by General Bertrand, Napoleon in Exile by O'Meara, Le Dernier Moment de Napoleon by Anton de Marchi, The Memoirs by Louis Marchand, and With Napoleon at Salina by Dr. Stokey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.